Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Syrma SGS Technology Limited Q4 and FY 2024 earnings conference call hosted by Avendus Spark. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded, and I'll hand the conference over to Mr. Ravi Swaminathan from Avendus Spark. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
On behalf of Avendus Spark, we welcome you all to Syrma SGS Q4 and full year FY 2024 results conference call. We have with us the senior management of the company. Now I hand over the call to Mr. Nikhil Gupta, Head of Investor Relations, to introduce the management and take the call forward. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Nikhil.
Thank you, Ravi. Hi, very good morning to all. Welcome to Syrma SGS Q4 and full year FY 2024 earnings call. We have with us today Mr. J.S. Gujral, Managing Director, Mr. Jayesh Doshi, Director, Mr. Satendra Singh, Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Bijay Agrawal, Chief Financial Officer, Syrma SGS, to discuss the performance of the company during the fourth quarter and full year FY 2024, followed by a detailed question-and-answer session. During this call, certain statements that will be made are forward-looking, which involve several risks, uncertainties, assumptions, and other factors that can cause results to differ materially from those in such forward-looking statements. All forward-looking statements made herein are based on the information presently available to the management, and the company does not undertake to update any forward-looking statements that may be made in the course of this call. In this regard, please do review the disclaimer statements in the earnings release and all other factors that can cause a difference. I will now hand over the call to Mr. J.S. Gujral, Managing Director of Syrma SGS. Thank you. Over to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, a very warm welcome to the FY 2024 annual earnings call of Syrma SGS Technology Limited. At the outset, on behalf of the management, I would like to place on record our sincere thanks to all the stakeholders of the company, be it the shareholders, investors, customers, business partners, and employees. But for their unstinted support, it would not have been possible for the company to be where it is today. I'll now briefly dwell on the FY 2024 performance of the company and then dwell on the quarterly and other details. It was a momentous year for us because we crossed the 3,000 crore revenue mark in this financial year, which is 4x of our FY 2021 revenues and 2.5x of our FY 2022 revenues. It represents a 54% increase. Over the last 3 years, the CAGR of the revenues has been a healthy 55%. We achieved the highest-ever quarterly sale of 1,149 crores in Q4 of FY 2024, representing a 63% increase over Q4 of FY 2023. We achieved in this year $100 million in exports, representing a 26% growth over FY 2023. So this number is very significant if we look at the exports from the EMS sector in India. And almost 100% of 95% of these exports are to USA and Europe. The CAGR of the exports over the last 3 years stands at a healthy 19%, especially when we see it in context of the growth in those markets. Now, the revenue growth in the current year has been led by consumer, followed by auto, followed by healthcare, and industrial. So coming to the margins, we crossed the 200 crore operating EBITDA mark and 250 crore EBITDA. Operating EBITDA and EBITDA stood at 6.8% and 8% respectively. Operating EBITDA has grown from 100 crores in FY 2021 to 213 crores in FY 2024, a CAGR of 29% over 3 years. For Q4, we achieved operating EBITDA of 82 crores, the highest ever in the quarter in this year. During the year, we achieved operating leverages of about 1.5%, and we plan to further consolidate on this in the coming year. This is a focus area for the management for the coming year. We had a marginal reduction of 7% in PBT, primarily on account of a high depreciation charge, which has gone up by 65%. Now, this depreciation charge has gone up because of the capex cycle which we have undertaken, which is yet to be sweated and will give optimum operating results. Net working capital has stabilized at about 70 days based on the average and about 80 odd days based on the year-end figures. And we plan to bring it down further over the next few quarters with a target of getting to 60 days odd level as the final figure. Our CFO would dwell on these financial numbers in detail after my interaction. So during the year, it's very significant that we doubled our SMT capacity from 3.2 million component placements per hour to 6.3 million components. In other words, we replicated in 1 year a capacity which was built over 3 decades. This is also reflected in a higher depreciation charge in the books. We are in the process of commissioning a design center in Pune, which will be primarily focused on ODM business in the MedTech vertical. This will go live in Q2 of FY25. Commissioning of the Pune plant is also on track and will be ready for production in Q2 or Q3, early Q3 of FY25. We are expanding our footprint in Germany by setting up a 40,000 square feet facility to address to the near-shoring requirements of our customers, oblique new customers. I think this will enable us in the coming years in attracting more business from the Western Europe belt. Coming to the future plans, we expect the growth momentum of 40-45% to be maintained in the coming year. This growth will be driven on the back of strong traction in demand across automotive, electric mobility, industrial, RFID and healthcare sectors. Consumer is expected to stabilize between 37-40% of our revenues in FY25 with the target of the management to bring it down further. We expect softness in our export in the first half of the year. But despite that, we expect exports to grow by about 30% in the coming year. We expect annual EBITDA margins to stabilize at 7%. Quarterly variations based on the seasonality of the demand from the various verticals would be always there. We expect the company to be OCF positive in FY25 and Vijay, our CFO, will dwell on this in detail. Based on the performance of the company, the management has decided to retain the dividend payout as was last year, which is essentially 15% dividend. With this, I now hand over to Vijay to dwell on the financial numbers in detail and then we can open up for the Q&A session. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. I'll now take you through the brief financial performance for the quarter and for the full year for FY24. Our operating revenue for this year is about 3,154 crore, which is up by 54% year on year. And for the quarter, it is 1,134 crore, which is a growth of 67% year on year. The growth has been mainly contributed by a stronger demand growth on the auto sector side, which is 60% plus, consumer sector side, which is 90% almost, healthcare side, 55% growth year on year, and same way, industrial sector, which has grown by almost 30%, which has resulted into the overall 54% growth year on year. Our export revenue, as Mr. Gujral has already explained, has grown up to almost 810 crores in FY24, which is 26% growth year-on-year. Similar way, ODM revenue for the year is about approximately 480 crores, which is 15% of my total sales for the year. Our gross margin for the year is about 22%, and for the quarter it is 18% on the back of mainly business mix change from the year to the quarter. With the continued efforts on the overall operational efficiencies and some bit of operating leverage benefits, we have been able to brought down our overall overhead percentage by almost 100 basis as a percentage of overall revenue, which is visible in our overall numbers. Our operating EBITDA for the year is 215 crores and for the quarter it is 82 crores, which is 7.2% of operating EBITDA margin for the quarter. Same way, PBT for the year is 168 crores and for the quarter it is 61 crores. And PAT for the year is 124 crores and for the quarter it is 45 crores, which is approximately 4% of PAT margin. Our current operating performance doesn't factor any PLI benefits so far, which can be taken into the P&L henceforth once we receive it. Moving to our overall working capital performance, our net working capital investment is currently for about 70 days of sales on a year-end basis, and which is again when we calculate on an average basis, as explained by Mr. Gujral. Moving to our debt position, we have a total gross debt as on balance sheet as on 31st of March 2024 is 576 crores, which is mainly working capital debt, inclusive of working capital debt of about 490 crores. We are also continuing with a total treasury position of 400 crores, and with that, my net debt position as on year end is 175 crores. Coming to CapEx, during the year we had spent almost 250 crores of CapEx, and we are expecting to spend another 150 to 180 crores in the year FY25 towards the project as Mr. Gujral has already explained regarding to our Pune project and other projects which are already ongoing. Our ROC, return on capital employed, for the year is about 15.4% when we calculate it excluding the unutilized IPO funds and goodwill from the balance sheet. Our OCF, operating cash flow, for the year is negative, mainly because of incremental investments towards working capital on the back of higher business demands expected into the upcoming quarters. Same way, some update on the merger which we have already filed regarding amalgamation of our subsidiaries, SGS Techniques, SGS Info Systems into Sigma SGS. We have already filed this scheme with NCLT and the next steps are already in process. We expect the merger to be completed in another 9 to 12 months period. Regarding guidance for the next financial year or FY25, as Gujral has already explained, we expect the similar growth of 40 to 45% to continue into our overall revenue, and with an operating EBITDA margin of approximately around 7%. We still continue to focus upon working capital improvement and OCF improvement. That will be a focus area going forward for the next year also. Maybe thank you very much. And I will hand over this call to Ravi again to open it for the question answer session.
Neha, we can go for the Q&A session.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Participant present on the audio bridge who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Aditya Bhatia from Investec. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, sir. So my first question is on the gross margin decline that we've seen this year, which has been quite sharp, partly offset by operating leverage benefits that you spoke about. Now, what has really led to this level of gross margin erosion? Because mix alone cannot justify that. It appears that margins across individual segments have also been declined.
Which is.
Broadly, individual customer-wise margins have not yet declined. The mix change, mainly you can see in the quarter, my consumer business has contributed almost 46%, which has all again resulted into some impact on the overall gross margins. Into the same sectors, my EV sector has contributed larger number to the auto, so that has also impacted slightly bit by 100 basis points. So that is where the overall mix change has impacted by this overall gross margin decline. Otherwise, customer-wise margins have not declined anyway so far.
Yeah, to just to sort of further expand on what Vijay shared, we very closely monitor the margin profile, the gross margin profile of each vertical. And there we don't see contraction in the vertical-wise margin. The fact that my consumer business is contributing 46% of my revenue led to this contraction of about 4% points, the gross material margin, which has come down from 26.4% to 22%. It's primarily because of that and not because of contraction in margins in the verticals where we operate or with the customers with whom we work. We monitor this very closely on a monthly or quarterly basis.
Sure, sir. So we no longer get the gross margin details on a segment-wise basis, but if I just assume that in second half we have similar gross margins across segments as first half for all other segments other than consumer, then the implied gross margin for the consumer business works out to be only mid-single digits. So what are we really missing over here? Is consumer business this lower margin business for the company? I mean, with single digit on a gross margin side would possibly mean no margins at the EBITDA level or maybe even losses at the EBITDA level. Or is it that in one of the segments at least we have seen a big margin drop?
See, in consumer business, we have two or three basic silos. One is my ODM business, which is a small portion of my revenue, which also includes my RFID business. So if I was to take the ODM business, including the RFID business, which is an ODM in nature, the margin profile would be compared to automotive and industrial somewhere in between. It is in the fiber to home consumer oriented telecom business, which forms a major chunk of the consumer business, that the margin profile is significantly lower. Here we talk of with a gross material margin of in telecom consumer business. It could be less than 10%. Hello.
Okay. Sure, sir.
Yeah.
So my second question was on working capital side. In the last few conference calls, you had alluded to consumer segment having a much lower working capital. And therefore ROICs across segments not being dramatically different. This time around, we have seen a big jump in consumer business, while some of the higher margin businesses have grown at a slower pace, but we have not seen the corresponding decline or moderation in working capital. So what has that been on account of?
You see, as I explained in my opening remarks, we have achieved a quarterly run rate of 1,000 plus 1,100 crores in Q4. But my average for the whole year would be 750. Now the inventory days we calculate on the average of the overall sales. If we were to calculate the net working capital based on the exit rate of Q4, which is my incoming rate of Q1 of this year, then my working capital, net working capital is significantly down to about 60 days. It could be a couple of days less or a couple of days more. So the Q1 of this year, I would be doing what I did in Q4 of last year. So based on that, my working capital days, there is significant reduction to about 60 odd days in this year. But yes, if we calculate it on an overall average of the thing, then my working capital based on an average of opening and closing is about 70 days, and based only on closing is about 82 days, which is down from 88, 89 days at the beginning of the year. So I've seen a 10% reduction in net working capital based on the closing balances and almost a near flattish thing is on the base of average. I hope I have clarified the point.
Sure, that's a fair point, sir. But my only only issue over here is that we've been growing very fast in the past as well. It's been a similar kind of trajectory that we've been seeing for some time now. And even the expectation is that growth rates will remain like this. In which case, working capital, that means, is likely to remain elevated, even if the mix that improves.
We believe that we are targeting to bring down this working capital from about 70 days, which is at the base of our average figures, to about 60 days in the coming year.
And if you see on a quarterly sales basis, if you calculate it, it is around 56 days of sales when we calculate it on the quarterly sales. So even if we continue with a similar kind of a sales number going forward, I think overall working capital days will then gradually come down.
Sure, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address the questions from all the participants, please limit your questions to one per participant. Should you have the follow-up question, we will request you to rejoin the queue. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sumant Kumar from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. So when we see the overall growth in segment like healthcare, significant growth, and auto also growth, you are talking about EV contribution also. So can you talk about is this segment is not sufficient growth to whatever the margin contraction we have? Because I think healthcare is a better margin business. Okay, and we have also acquired Johari Digital, which is a better margin business. So can you talk about how the Johari is not helping or margin has deteriorated from there when we have acquired?
No, you see, the healthcare business forms about 8% of my total revenue. So if the healthcare business at 8% grows at say 30%, it would still form a smaller absolute figure of my total revenue. Hence, it's in fact, the positive impact of the on EBITDA gets diluted because of a higher base of the consumer business. Consumer business is approximately 40-odd% of my revenue, where the healthcare business is 8%, 8-9%. So if the lower margin on a 40% sort of bucket has a negative sort of it erases the positive of a growth in an 8% business, which constitutes an 8% business. It's not that the healthcare business is not profitable, it is profitable as we envisaged, but being only 8% of the revenue, it in fact gets diluted on the overall number figures.
And Johari Digital margin has deteriorated for when we acquired?
It's sustaining the margin on which basis we had acquired the business. There is no significant variation in it. It's a healthy business.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Indrajit Agarwal from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. I have a couple of questions. First, sir, when I look at this quarter's numbers, consumer is about 46% of sales and your operating EBITDA margin is 7.2%. Next year, as we get to consumer around 35% of sales or say 40% of sales, why would our EBITDA margin go down to 7%?
Well, we are guiding on 7%. We are conservative because the year is yet to pan out, to be very honest. So if we find, if we believe that there is a need to revise it either way, we'll come back to you on our quarterly earning calls. But as of date for the year, we are maintaining a 7% EBITDA annual margin, which could see quarterly variations because of the change in the product mix. But on annual basis, we are very confident that we'll sustain 7% EBITDA margins with a 40-45% growth rate. If it goes up, we'll come to the back to the market and revise our guidance accordingly. But for now, we all should take 7%, which is the management's take.
Sure. Can you help us with what is the current order book and what is the domestic and export mix in that?
Vijay will take that.
So we have an order book visibility of approximately 4,500 crores, in which export would be approximately 22-25%.
Sure. And lastly, one more if I may. Given that you are targeting to be FCF positive next year, what would be the funds used for? You have taken an enabling resolution to raise funds. So what would that be used for?
This is just an enabling resolution, and we wanted to be prepared, ready, available for any growth opportunity. So broadly, the funds, whenever we raise, it will be more targeted towards long-term business growth. And that's what can be one of the use.
So this is an enabling resolution to keep the company ready, because we are, we always keep evaluating inorganic acquisitions. And as I had shared in my earlier call, we were looking at sort of, our aim was to acquire companies where we don't have the product offering. Hence, we had acquired JDHL. And similarly, in the railways and the defense, it would take us a lot of regulatory approval time if we were to do it in-house ab initio. So we are looking at those companies. And this is just an enabling resolution, then it has to go through the AGMs and all those things. So that's why we have taken this enabling resolution. We'll share the purpose for which it is to be used once we hit the market and we have concrete proposals on our table.
Sure. That's all from my side and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Piyush Khandelwal from Bank of India Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. So my question is on the ROIC.
We can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello. Yeah. So my question is on the ROIC of, let's say, consumer business. If I look at the annual basis, a consumer business contributes 40% in FY24 versus 32%. So there's an 8% deviation. And you said that the fiber to home business accounts the majority chunk of this consumer business, so gross margins are less than 10%. I mean, what we have seen, especially in case of a consumer business, that margins are lower, but ROICs or ROCEs are much better. So is it fair to them that similar in our case, or let's say ROICs are better than the company average in this fiber to home business, lesser than that? If you can just help me in that specific consumer business ROIC.
See, in the consumer business, once it stabilizes, the ROCs are better because of lower involvement of working capital and higher asset turn. You see, broadly in the EMS industry, the higher the margin of the business, comparatively lower will be the asset turns and higher will be the working capital involvement. It's inversely proportionate. So lower margin businesses have a higher asset turn and a lower involvement of working capital. In our particular case, this is true, but since we have still not reached the optimum scale of things, because this thing has only happened during the course of the year, we expect its impact on working capital to be visible in FY25. So as I just shared, if I share some numbers, my net working capital on a global basis is about 711 crores. And if I take the exit rate of 1100 crores of Q4, which translates into 350 odd crores of per month revenue, my net working capital as number of days is already down to below 60. Vijay had referred to a figure of 56, and he could dwell this in further detail. So going forward, we expect the impact of this to be reflected in the financials. This is an area of the sort of a strong focus of the management. Even if it is 60 days, 58 days, net working capital or the working capital involvement is a focus area for the management to improve the OCF. Vijay, if you could dwell something more on it.
Yes, absolutely. So ROC can be furthermore improved, and for this consumer business also, some bit of like this had started during the year. So the full benefit or full efficiencies have not yet achieved. Going forward, we will target those efficiencies in terms of working capital and OCF, which will help us to achieve the desired ROC.
No, 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 that's fair enough. I mean, you've been making the same comments since last three quarters. My question is specifically because we have grown 90%, so we have utilized some of the assets. It's not that we have not utilized. So my question is specific to that fiber to home business, which I'm mentioning that accounts for majority of chunk of this consumer business. There, the ROICs are better than the company average. Is it lower? Is it at par the company average? Just that's the question.
Here it is, ROICs are almost in the range of or maybe as per the company average only. It is just like a low margin business with a better asset turn, but still delivering similar kind of ROC. That was the target. The only point here is during the quarter four also, if you would have seen, there is a higher sales and similar with the same higher sales of the total company level is what we are expecting in the upcoming quarters also. So that is where we are maintaining higher net working capital as of now in terms of absolute numbers and the inventories. So which will gradually in the upcoming quarters, we should be able to see that benefit of number of days of working capital into the OCF, which will help us improve the ROIC percentage by a few percentage points. But that is what we are targeting. But overall, on an average basis, it is not a low ROIC business. It is almost at par kind of a average ROIC business.
All right, sir. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak Krishnan from Kotak Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. I hope you can hear me fine. Just sort of drilling into the similar sort of question, because a peer that does, you know, business for Airtel probably has, you know, net working capital days in the 10-day sort of range. So still, if I assume like a best case, you know, 4,500-4,600 crore top line next year and, you know, 320 crores of EBITDA, with about 60 days, we still are not sure of how you will sort of, you know, generate positive OCF. So could you kind of help us as to, you know, what gives us confidence that 60 days we should be sort of enough in terms of OCF? Because next year again, because there will be growth after that, right? We will be stocking up inventory for FY26 growth. So just wanted to sort of dwell into how are we looking at, you know, positive OCF specifically.
So in your maybe the numbers which you have taken as an example here, from 320 crores of EBITDA, we are expecting maybe there can be some bit of tax outflows for about 60 odd crore rupees, one can take as an example. And maybe incremental working capital may not be more than 100 odd crore rupees. And balance will be operating cash flow is what we are seeing here.
Sure. Maybe just one final follow-up. What is the actual net working capital days in the home to fiber business? Like, what kind of net working capital days we have for that particular plant?
So, as of now, we are at about 650 or 670 odd crores of net working capital. On a 60 days basis, assuming a 4,500 crores of sales, we may be at around 750-770 odd crores of total working capital requirement. So, there is another 100 crore rupees of working capital requirement may pop up for the upcoming year. But that another 100 crores of working capital with the additional 60 crores of tax, both are removed from the EBITDA number of maybe estimated. Maybe. But the, in these examples, like we are just quoting as an example number here is 320 odd crores. Still, there can be a good decent operating cash flow positive number we available. Assuming the company is able to maintain the entire operations with the incremental 100 crores of working capital, which is what we are keeping at a target.
Yeah. You see, if just to dwell on some figures, I think for better clarity, 315-320 crore EBITDA would result into a PAT of approximately 165 odd crores at back of the hand calculation. Our current net working capital is about 710 crores as of March of 24. So if we take it a 60 days thing, then there is no incremental investment in the working capital. If we take it at 70 days, my working capital at the year end, March 25, should be at about 850-860 crores. So in the worst case basis that there is no improvement in the working cap, my PAT goes into my working capital. I don't have to borrow further at the worst case. But if it's a reduction, 60 days, it comes down to 60 days, then my working capital requirement is about 750 crores against 711 crores as of March of 24. to hardly a 39-40 crore increment. That's the game plan which the management is focused on. How do we bring down the net working capital from the present level of about 70 odd days to 60 days?
Sure, sir. And will we see that continuously throughout the year, or would it be more, you know, 2H driven, given that 1H will be still ramping up on, you know, the incremental volume?
Start kicking in the quarter. Because I personally don't see my net working capital significantly going up in the Q1 of the next year from the current level. So if we are planning, if we do say 1,000 crores the exit rate of Q4, then my working capital for thing is already down to 60 days. Assuming there is some amount of incremental, it will be 62, 63, 65 days in Q1. Broad figures.
Sure, sir. Those are my questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Hardik Rawat from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. I had a couple of questions with regards to the healthcare business. Just wanted to understand that you've done a top line of about 1.2 billion rupees. What part of this was from the core healthcare portfolio of Syrma, and what part of this was from the Johari Digital company that we acquired?
So for the quarter, I think you are referring here this 1150 crores of revenue, which includes almost 100 plus crores of total healthcare business, and almost 50-50 is from the core business, and 50% of it is like from the acquired GDHL business, MedTech business.
Got it. Also, a longer term question in terms of our mix from consumer has increased from about 20% to now 40%. Now going ahead, how do you see this evolve over the next 2 to 3 years? And next year we are targeting about 45 to 46 billion in revenue. What do you think is, what do you expect is going to be the mix of this revenue?
Sindhar, will you take that question? The mix of the business in the coming years. Sindhar, our CEO, will address this particular question, and then I can also pitch it. Or I can pitch in the beginning that the endeavor of the management is to bring down this percentage from 40 odd percent to below 40%. That would essentially be with an increase in other verticals. So Sindhar can dwell in on this detail, but the direction of the management is very clear that the consumer business, we would like to keep it to, happy to keep it low 40 in this year itself, but in longer run it has to come down to between 30 and 35 in the long run. This year, I think it's too early to say.
I think we are very focused on this particular activity, which is to balance between different segments. And we are doubling down on growing our revenues in the industrial and auto, and that would be kind of in a way helping us offset. But at this point of the numbers which Gujralji and Vijay shared, I think we will hold on to that. But going forward, I think there's a lot of focus on growing the revenue, growing the business in the industrial and auto.
All right. And one last question, circling back to the Johari Digital. Just wanted to understand what sort of base did we have back in 4Q FY23, and how the growth has panned out in that company.
See, the growth of Johari in the FY24 has been flattish. There was this merger and all that, but we expect a decent growth of about 25-30% in this business going forward. And the management is very focused on the areas where we have to work in the Meditech business, which will essentially be revolving around 4-5 verticals of pain and rehab, surgical, diagnostic, patient care, and some services, certification services in this business. So that would be the focus of growth, and we expect this business to grow at about 30% in this year and significantly higher percentage in the future years. And as I had earlier said at the time of acquisition of this business, this is a platform which we have acquired and not a business per se. So going forward, this would form a decent portion of our overall business.
All right. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vipraw Srivastava from Incredible Research. Please go ahead.
Hi. Just had two questions. So first question is regarding what would be the order book breakup by segment?
I can tell that. Broadly, out of this 4,500 crores of open order book visibility, about 40% is what from consumer business, 20-25% from industrial business, similar way 20-22% is approximately from auto sector, and about 5-7% from healthcare, balance is IT and railways.
Noted, noted. Secondly, the 70 days NWC number which you are coming up with, net working capital days, is based on average, right?
This is based on average. If we calculate on the closing inventory basis, it is around 82 days.
Yes, but average is not a correct metric, right? Because there is a very significant difference between last year and this year inventory receivable days. So average wouldn't be a better metric, right? I guess closing days would be a much better metric.
Yeah, if we were to take the closing numbers, we are down from 88, 89 to 82 days. We are sharing the average because industry peers are also reflecting only the average. So we are sharing both the numbers. If we were to compare the quarter and the year end numbers, it is down from 89 to 82 days. If we take the average, it is a flattish from 72 odd days to 70 odd days. So
right.
We are sharing the numbers because the practice of the peers is to show average only. So for an apple-to-apple comparison, we are sharing both the numbers. But yes, for us it is a year-end number. And that's why I said that if I take the year-end numbers and my Q4 run rate, we are down to 60 days.
Okay, cool. Cool. And last question, why has the receivable days gone up so much? As far as I can see, it has gone up significantly, receivables.
So there is quite a bit of sales is what we have achieved during this quarter, and that is where the sales receivables numbers happen, because there is always a maybe 2 to 3 months of receivable period is always there. So if we have achieved a very significant amount of sales in quarter four, that is reflecting into the receivables stage also.
Yes, but does the company internally has an ROC metric which we use? I mean, if you can share that, I mean, before you go for a deal or you go for sales, internally what would be your ROC metric which you have, roughly?
So broadly for every business, whatever we are doing, acquiring as a new business, we always calculate ROC and track ROC also, because ultimately without ROC performance, there is no, like, we evaluate all these metrics, internally we are also doing it. Some bit of time we take a strategic call also if some business is there linked with some kind of PLI benefits, some other kind of entering into a new market, new product segments, so those kind of strategic calls also we do take along with that ROC thing. But generally for a normal business, we always try to get more than 20% plus kind of a ROC performance.
And Vijay just mentioned the PLI. In all the financials which you have shared with the community, it does not include a penny. I repeat, a penny of PLI. For FY23, where our claim is in the final stages of sort of approval and disbursement, we have a gross PLI of about 9 crore rupees. After sharing with the customer, we would be left with about 3-3.5-4 crore rupees. For FY24, based on the sales which we have done in the telecom consumer business, my PLI entitlement on a very rough estimate would be about 48 to 50 crores. Out of which, assuming I share 2/3 with my customers, I am left with 1/3, it is a 16 crore benefit for the sales which I have done in this year. Now, this PLI has not been factored in. So, if we were to hypothetically, because we have taken a call that will account for the PLI once it's in the bank. Hypothetically, if we were to take it on an accrual basis, we are being conservative to take it on a cash basis, if we were to take it on an accrual basis, my EBITDA goes up straight by 16 crores. That is the net what will come to me in the company. And 16 crores on a 3,000 crores base translates into 0.5-0.6%. And that will also directly impact the ROCE of that particular business.
Right. Last question. So a significant chunk of your EBITDA margin expansion this quarter has come from other expenses. It has come down as a percentage of sales. So any thoughts on that? What is the other expense which has helped the EBITDA margins, the breakup for that?
Other expense?
So broadly, I think you're talking about this operating efficiencies you are talking about. So mainly, yes, the other expenses include many others like facility, infrastructure related expenses, R&M expenses, legal and consulting expenses. It includes quite a bit of fixed nature kind of expenses. So as the revenue grows up, the operating leverage is resulting into that benefit savings.
We have saved 1.5% on that compared to FY23, and we want to plan to consolidate on this saving in the coming year further. My operating expenses have come down by 1.5% approximately.
Right, cool. And if I'm allowed to ask one last question, fundamentally in your business, is there any risk that you can be undercut by your competitors on price? Because as far as I can see in the PCB consumer business, there is no as such barrier to entry. So is there a possibility that your competitor might undercut you on price, and then in that sense you might have to also take a cut in gross margins? Is that a possibility?
Oh, see, in the consumer business, as you refer to it, there is a big entry barrier of PLI. Only the companies which have got the PLI. For example, if I was to enter a mobile phone business today, I'm just taking a hypothetical question. If I was to enter a mobile phone business, I am at a disadvantage compared to the existing players because they have a PLI and I don't have a PLI. Similarly, in the telecom sector, the PLI entitlement is already there with certain companies. Now, within that fraternity of companies which have the PLI, I don't think we have not witnessed undercutting of the prices. New entrants have a barrier because they don't have a PLI, and it involves a lot of regulatory and quality approvals of the customers.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bharat Shah from Ask Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Namaste. One thing I still could not understand is your EBITDA margin guidance, which you said is 7% for 24-25. If I look at your last 12 quarters also, not a single quarter is EBITDA margin of less than, all of the quarters are well above 7%. If you are saying that the consumer business, which is a low margin business, percentage would decline in 24-25 and would decline further going forward, why is the EBITDA margin at 7%? I mean, it baffles me. When in last 12 quarters, not a single quarter, forget about a year, but not a single quarter, EBITDA margin is below 7%. It is actually well in excess of 7% in each quarter. Then with a improving RFID contribution, with reducing consumer business percentage in the total mix, and on a larger business with some amount of operating leverage of the spend that we have made on people significantly, plus on the consultancy fees that we spend. All of that, I can't understand why the EBITDA margin should be 7%.
Good question. We are being based on what we have achieved in the last quarter and the sales mix which we have to be on the conservative side because earlier on we were, I wouldn't call it accused, but we were held up for not being very positive on the guidance. So we are taking all the pros and cons, guiding 7%. Now, it is a call of the management to guide. If during the course of the quarters we find that the ground situation has changed from what we believe it would be, we would be more than happy to come and share with you all the revision in the guidance. But for now, we stick to 7%, being on a conservative basis.
And this is an annual guidance. So quarterly seasonalities may still be there slight a bit here and there, as it was there for FY24 also. But full year basis, we are confident to deliver.
But FY24 also not a single quarter where our EBITDA margin is below 7%. Are you confusing between operating profit margin or EBITDA margin?
I'm saying operating EBITDA.
Meaning without counting other income.
Yes, yes, please. So all this 7% is operating EBITDA margins. So happy that you clarified it. I should have clarified it, so we are at fault on that. It is the operating EBITDA margin which we are guiding at 7%, not the overall EBITDA margin.
If operating margin is at 7%, that number for 24, fiscal 24 is about 6.3. So are you saying about 0.7% higher than that?
It's 6.8 because foreign exchange fluctuations are related to the business purchase and sale, and they are accounted for as operating income. These are not on investments or anything. So if I were to take the overall operating margin, including the foreign exchange fluctuations, which are essentially on the purchase and sale of goods and services, my annual EBITDA margin is about 6.8%, and the exit margin is about 7.2%. Exit quarter margin is 7.2%.
So
situations are related to the business. These are the accounting entries. When we book a purchase or sale, it's on the bill of exchange entry rate. And when we remit money, it could be lower at a higher rate. So these are fluctuations purely related to the business operations and not to the investment or treasury income.
All right. So 6.8% operating margin of fiscal 24 should at least be 7% in fiscal 25.
Yes. Against the 7.2% exit margin of Q4 of FY24. So there's a 0.2% contraction which we are projecting as a conservative thing. So we say 7% operating EBITDA margin for full annual FY25 against 6.8% of FY24.
Gujar sahab, maaf karna, but are we doodh ka jala chhaat bhi phunk phunk ke bhi rahe, aisi sthiti hai ye, kyunki ye number phir bhi meri samajh mein nahi aa raha hai. On a larger turnover, there will be operating leverage. Non-consumer mix will be the higher. So all that should lead to this number also better. So are we being unduly beaten up by what has happened where our guidance is being more enthusiastic by numbers are being behind? And because of that, we are just taking a very conservative stance.
For the present, we hold on to this guidance, and another 60 days from now, we'll be back to the market with our Q1 results, and we find that there is a significant change, we'll revise our guidance accordingly. But for current, my submission is that we stick to the 7% guidance.
Okay. But there are no business condition adversity that you are seeing which makes you revise this number.
Currently, we stick by this number, but we are not seeing any adversity which is pulling down this number. We are taking a sort of calculated this number and on a, say, let's put it on a slightly conservative basis, a Dravid style approach instead of a Varinder Sehwag style approach, we stay at 7%. And if the situation changes during the course of the quarter, we'll definitely come back. We'll be more than happy to share even good, better news with the investing community and analysts and my investors. But for now, I'm holding my horses and saying it's 7%.
All right. One last thing. Depreciation has been about 50 crores for the year, and interest has been about 40 crores, so about 90 crores. If we are likely to be sweating assets better and there will be cash flow release, that interest number probably will be lower for the year ahead, similar or higher?
So going forward in the next year, what we see, depreciation can be slightly higher for the capacities, whatever we have done or maybe which are under capitalization. So quarter number, you can see about 16 odd crore rupees of depreciation for the quarter, last four, quarter four. So similar way, maybe the number should be approximately around 60 to 70 crores of depreciation for the next year. And financing cost is like always a derivative number of our total financing. If we are able to manage the working capital as per our plan, my working capital borrowing will also be in the similar range, and accordingly the financing cost would be similar way. So with a slight a bit of 10 to 15% of variance.
So interest cost would be around 40-45 crores.
Yeah, 40 to 50 crores we can say.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we expect about, as Vijay was saying, depreciation to be about 60-65, interest 45, so about 100-110 crores of charge after operating EBITDA from over things. So if we say the operating EBITDA is for about 315, whatever is the figure, so that will be reduced.
Operating profit plus other income minus the charge.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you and all the best. I hope we are dutifully stung by the past, and therefore we are guiding with more cautiously for the future. That's appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Keyur Pandya from ICICI Prudential Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. So just first clarification, the capex that we have done, organic capex in FY24, should be around 330-340 crore. Is it correct understanding? And what would be the utilization for this incremental capex?
So this capex, yes, the overall number is correct, and the total utilization would be approximately we are planning to set up a facility in Manesar, one more Manesar 3. Part of the capex has gone towards it. Part of the capex has gone towards my Chennai project. We have also acquired land for my Hosur project, so the part of the capex for that, Pune and Bawal. It's a mix of 4-5 projects towards which we have done the entire capex here.
So I'm saying on the gross block of FY23 end, what is the utilization and whatever capitalization that we have done in FY24, what is the utilization on that incremental added gross block also?
Okay. Yes. See, as of the year in March 24, on an average basis, my asset utilization is about 65-odd%.
On the blended basis, with the doubled capacity?
Yeah, if my total capacity available as of March of 24, and then we calculate the capacity every month as the capacities are added, the average utilization is below 70%. So
okay.
This is what gives us the sort of leverage to grow in this year. And as I shared in my last call also, that the capex which we will be doing in FY25 is aimed at my FY26 target. For the FY25 target, by and large, my capex is in place and the capacities are in place, barring some balancing equipment or one odd equipment in a particular location because of a customer demand. So whatever capex which Vijay tells me is about 150 crores in this year,
yes,
FY25, is aimed for FY26 revenues, bulk of it.
Okay, 150 crore organic capex. And anything on the inorganic side?
Inorganic, as of date, we have nothing, no concrete proposals on the table, but we keep evaluating proposals in areas where we are not present in offerings which we don't have to sort of complete our product offerings in defense, aerospace and maybe railways. So those things are a work in progress. We keep evaluating, and once we have a concrete proposal in hand, we'll definitely come back to you people.
Okay. This last question, if I look at other expenditure, other OPEX, sequentially Q3 and Q4, our revenue has gone more than 60-70% up Q on Q. Our other OPEX is around flat at around 80 crore. Now, this is some one-off, or we should continue similar run rate going ahead also in FY25? Because if I look at the revenue guidance, that is around 45 billion. So that is on the similar quarterly run rate as we have seen in Q4. So this 80 crore has some one-offs, and that is why it is lower, or this is the stabilized other expenditure level on the quarterly basis.
Other expenses include some bit of variable and some bit of fixed expenses both. The variable portion is the labor contractor expenses. So whatever is there, that will definitely be increasing with the increase in the sales. That's where we are. Rest of all are fixed, so this will be there in the similar range, the balance number.
Okay, noted. Thanks a lot and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pratik Banthia from Girik Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Pratik, your line has been unmuted. Please go ahead with your question. Mr. Pratik? Can you hear us?
Next one, I'm probably in the background, we can check.
As there is no response from the line of the current participant, our next question is from the line of Vipin Goyal from my Mirables Investment. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. I have just one question regarding to the commentary that you made on the bringing on the consumer mix in FY25. So if I look at the current order book, it's at about 4,500 crore, and there you say that you have stated that it's the consumer mix is about 40%. So if we assume 40% growth, that translates to roughly 4,500 crore kind of revenues for the next year. Now my question is that how are we going to bring down the consumer mix execution in 25? Because consumer orders are usually short cycle orders. So this 40% of the order books is what we'll have to execute anyway next year. On top of that, there could be some incremental consumer orders as well. So, could you just help us understand what am I missing there?
So you're not missing. We are targeting that the consumer business in the current year, FY25, would be anything between 37% and 40% of the revenue. That's all the breakup of our projections we have done internally with the industry-wise breakup. Now, there could always be a possibility going forward that if there's a business, then my top line would go further up. But as of date, what we have budgeted, we believe that the consumer business will be between 37% and 40% of the revenue. And the revenues are expected to grow at about 40-45%. Now, hypothetically, again, if I end up a 60% increase in revenue next year, if, I'm not committing, I'm saying if, then obviously some of the verticals will see a higher growth. Now, whether it will be consumer, healthcare or industrial, that will share when it comes if we have to revise the guidance. But for now, the guidance which we are giving is a 40-45% top line growth with a 7% of it, and the one particular segment we have shared the the composition of it in the total revenue.
Got it. Okay. So does that also mean that the incremental order intake that we'll be taking for 25, that wouldn't have much of the consumer the FTTH piece that we are doing? Because if we take those, then that means your consumer mix is kind of going up because it's already built into the current order book, the 40%.
So yeah, see, current order book and based on the visibility from the customers, we have shared the figures. So if we, as we go forward, and it's a dynamic society, it's not that it's an annual plan which is which cannot be changed or revised upwards or downwards, mostly upwards. So if that happens, we'll share with the markets. But as of now, I can't say the plan will not be revised or some vertical will not go up or some vertical will not go down. So that's the thing, as we progress the year and the quarter, we'll keep updating the markets and the analysts on this. But as of now, we stand by what we have said, 40 to 45% growth rate with 7% EBITDA margin, operating EBITDA margin.
Okay. Okay. So, how does this work, the PLI piece, the FTTH piece, in terms of ordering? I mean, since we are qualified for the PLI, does that mean that we'll have to anyway meet certain criteria and have to bid for the upcoming projects in the similar category?
The PLI scheme has a play of investment and incremental revenue. Those have been factored in the projections. It's not that I have to take more orders to avail the PLI. To whatever entitlement I have got today based on the approval which I have received from the Government of India, I have factored in those businesses. Now, if those businesses got to exceed that limit, they will not be PLI entitled. So, if, for example, if my business limit is a revenue limit is 800 crores, I do 1200 crores in a particular vertical, but I'll be entitled to PLI only on 800 crores based on the approval which the government has given. So, we have taken all those things into consideration when we have drawn up our plans, AOPs, and shared with you.
Sure, sir. Okay. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rasha from Ambit AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sir. Two questions from my side. Firstly, if we see our order book sequentially, it looks flat at 4,500 crores. So there is, because we are selling down a consumer business, or there has been a general slight slowdown in other segments as well, if we see sequentially? And second is that for the railways business, so now as we have got the RDSO approval, so what kind of order book as well as revenues do you see for the next year, that is FY25 and FY26?
Okay. Now, the flattish order book position which you are referring to is because of a higher execution in Q4. It's not because of any softening in demand from any of the sectors. During this coming quarters, the position may change because my turnover increased by almost like 30% from 700 odd crores to 750 odd crores to 1100 crores between Q3 and Q4. And the orders will never be in sync with the execution. But the broad visibility we have shared with you. As far as RDSO approval is concerned, we have orders which we'll be executing this year. Last year, against the RDSO approval, we executed our order was about 3.5 crore rupees. We expect in this year, more towards the second half of the year, from this RDSO approval to grow to about 25-30 crore rupees. Railways is a longer gestation period in terms of getting the orders and executing the orders. Unlike automotive, where once you get the approval, the execution is very fast, and consumer. So currently we have the visibility of railways which we have shared. It should be about in the current year 45 to 50 crore rupees of business in the current year. If any further orders are received, we'll share when they are received. Currently the situation is this.
And how is the margin profile for these orders?
It's better if compared to the automotive and industrial.
Okay.
But it is also accompanied by a higher working capital cycle because the execution period is long. it involves a lot of stage-wise inspections and all that. So the working capital cycle is long in railways.
Okay. So last question, this is, so we have incorporated the new design subsidiary and you said that we expect revenues from FY25 onwards. So what kind of revenues do you expect from this subsidiary?
Early days, we have got strong inquiries. We believe that in the current year, we should be able to come above board on the design part. When I say above board means that it should not be out of pocket. How much business we will be able to generate in this year, it's still in the works. I think next year is the time when we should have fruits of this effort. It is taking longer than expected. I had expected that 24-25 we should be able to kick in decent amount of revenues, but with the revenues of the company being about what we are projecting, it will still form a very small portion of our revenues and hence a small portion of our EBITDA. But going forward, I'm very confident that this leg of the business should be EBITDA accretive.
Oh, fine.
Thank you. The next follow-up question is from the line of Vipraw Srivastava from Incred Research. Please go ahead.
Thanks for allowing me to ask a follow-up. Just one thing on the balance sheet. So your other current assets have gone up significantly compared to last year. So wanted to understand that why is that happening? What is that other current assets comprising of?
Okay. Vijay can answer in detail, but the significant increase in the other current assets is on the account of GST, which has to be paid in advance when you buy the material. Inventories are accounted for net of GST. So GST is one of the major portions of the other current assets, but Vijay can dwell in detail on this.
Primarily, that's the reason with the higher businesses and multiple locations, there is a higher inventory holding which is there reflecting into my balance sheet. So that is one of the reasons, balances with the government authorities and all. So, and some of the advances for the new business. So these are the two things which are actually leading to this particular.
And one last question. So you're setting up of something in Germany, you mentioned in the initial part of your call, right? What was that?
See, we have had a company in Germany since 2008. They were operating out of small premises. And we had shared with a call, I think in the December earning call or somewhere, that we had also set up a prototype line in Germany to address to the needs of the new products for mid-sized companies who don't have bandwidth to come to India. Now, based on the traction and the input from the customers, we have expanded and consolidated in a single facility of 40,000 square feet in Stuttgart, Germany, which should go on stream. It's under refurbishment and fit-out, which should go on stream in Q3 of this year, maybe end of Q2 or the beginning of Q3 of this year. So that will address, I would have a facility to show to my existing and potential new customers, address to the near-shoring requirements of the European customers. So it would initially be an integration facility, which means that all the boards will be done in India, shipped to our subsidiary in Germany, and they will integrate into the final product. So this is a step towards increasing the exports. My exports have increased by 26% last year. CAGR of 3 years is 19%. And believe you me, neither Europe nor America is growing at that rate. So this is to address a potential business market segment in Western Europe that we have beefed up our presence in Germany.
Okay. So there are no plans of moving the manufacturing, right? Only the integration part, right?
Yeah, we have a prototype line over there to do the NCIs. We have currently no plans of doing the bulk scale manufacturing, but if there is a business opportunity and it's a profitable to be, whether I do it over here by putting up a line or I do it in Germany, The only thing is in Germany the costs are more, so it logically doesn't make sense to do the large scale production where manual intervention is high. So hence I believe that we'll start with integration, but logic says that it will convert into a full scale manufacturing in the years to come. It's a normal logic.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take this as the last question and I'll hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Okay. Thought there was another question coming. Before I give my closing comments, I'll ask Sender to share his small view on this, summarize view on this, and then I'll close it off.
Thank you, Gujralji, and thank you everyone on the call. I think we had a very busy quarter, as indicated by the growth, and we expect to continue the similar growth in the years to come. Clearly, I think we are at a stage wherein as a company we are investing for future, like as indicated in many data points and also comments made by Gujralji and Vijay on the investments we are making in the equipments. Whether it is the SMT capacity, I think we doubled the capacity. I think Gujralji has said it in the call today and very clearly. So whatever capacity the company created over initial 30 plus years, we have created same capacity in last 1 year. So we are doubling the capacity effectively in last 1 year. So that prepares us to deal with the business which is coming in. We are continuing to invest in the talent, bringing in more professional on board. And we are continuing to invest on optimizing our processes, because as we go through this growth of growth journey, we should ensure that our processes are strong and they are ready for the future. Because what we have clearly is a very solid road ahead of us. And we are doing everything we can to make sure that we deliver on the commitments which we have made and the indications we have given during this call today. I would say thank you very much for your support and back to Gujralji again.
Thank you, Sinder. I think Sinder has dwelled in on all aspects of the business. I would like to restate that management is very, very focused on building a long-term sustainable business. Hiccups when you grow at 50-55% CAGR over 3 years will happen. Ideally, they should not happen, but they will happen. And they will have impact, more negative impact than positive impact because of the hiccups. As we have stabilized the growth rate and the teams have gained the confidence of managing growth rate upwards of 40-45% year on year, I think the teams are now focused on bringing in operational efficiencies and the cost of the growth. Please appreciate that when you grow from a small base at such a scorching pace, efficiencies are the first casualty, and efficiencies would be both operating and on cost of material. Going forward, I think we are now well placed to take benefit of the base which we have created, and the management is focused on high growth trajectory with stable margins in the business. Exports would continue to be a forte, and as shared, not many companies from India have a $100 million export. Independent EMS companies like us, a Foxconn can do by exporting the Apple phone, but an independent company like us, I don't think there would be many companies who have that level of exports, and we expect the exports to continue to grow at this pace of 20-odd%, maybe higher in the coming years. MedTech will be one of the significant contributors to the bottom line in the coming years. As I said, we have set up a design center in Pune, primarily focused at MedTech specialty. We are very conscious of our social responsibility, and we have internal plans of how do we reduce the carbon footprint, and this is being monitored on a monthly basis. So we are here to create an organization which will grow at a rate of 40% with stable profits and be mindful of the social responsibilities of the towards the society. With this, I say a big thank you to all of you for supporting us and look forward to this continued journey with you. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Avendus Spark, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.